What is going on, everybody? It's LG here, solo today, and which is good because last week we didn't have a show because for some reason Canada has decided that we now have two holiday Mondays in a row, or at least this year we did. The previous holiday from this week was Thanksgiving, and the previous week from last week, the holiday from last week is a new holiday that we just started observing. It doesn't necessarily fall on Mondays, but we record on Mondays, and it's been two holiday Mondays in a row, so it's been hard to sync up. Last week, we just couldn't make it happen, and this week, Phil is actually traveling, or was just on the way back from a 14-hour journey down to see his son play hockey. So it's instead of having a two-week break and decide, you know what, I'm just going to go back to the old days, do a little solo podcasting. I know we did that, I think, a couple months ago where it's just me talking. So we're going to do a quick one today, just me chatting. I've got a few personal strange things that happened to me, and then also a general update on all things First Mint. We're going to talk NHL. We're going to talk about Top Shot Pack Market, maybe a little bit of Ballers. And then next week, we'll be back at it with Phil. So please enjoy this rare, very rare, exalted solo episode of The First Mint.
Your search is over, now welcome to First Mint. Looking for NFT content, look no further cause this is it. From Top Shot, the blockchain, they got the data chops, analysis, and pack drops, the show's a crater hot. LG and Phil D, the best amongst others, best brothers that happen to ball since the Ball Brothers. So settle in, cause it's time for the best show. Ayo Quad, we'll be repping the First Mint. Let's go.
Oh, is what Phil would say if he was here, but he's not. It's LG. Just back for the solo pod, as you heard in the intro. Rare intro. We actually don't do intros anymore. Just felt like right to just kind of just go right into the show. I didn't feel like you guys necessarily needed to know anymore what was coming up on the show. I feel like you didn't really need that two-minute blurb, but if you missed the early two-minute blurb, definitely let me know in the comments or shoot me a DM or whatever. Let me know if you do miss it. But I feel like the titles are kind of self-explanatory now. You have the description. If you're listening to this on audio, you've got it all there. So I don't feel like we need that intro anymore. Anyways, not a lot to talk about, but a few things to talk about. It is Canadian Thanksgiving today. For a lot, it always stuns people in the U.S. that we have Thanksgiving, first of all, and that it's a completely different day than it is in the U.S. People outside Canada, U.S., they don't even know the hell we're talking about. They don't have Thanksgiving. It doesn't exist anywhere else. Same as Halloween, where our continent championed these October things and our fall things. Anyways, Thanksgiving in Canada is literally the exact same thing as it is in the U.S. It's I get together with family, have some turkey, I lay around and watch football, I guess. You know, that is basically the same thing. We don't have like a Thursday tradition kind of to it. It's mainly just a long weekend where people take the Friday to Monday. And I think the Monday is officially the Thanksgiving or the Sunday. I actually don't know. It's not really like it's kind of important here. I think some families really care about it because it's, you know, it's a good time for kids who've been away at college or they come home for the first time after having gone away, you know, that type of stuff. So it can be kind of like a nice little break in the like back to school, back to work flow of the fall. But I wouldn't really say, you know, it's nice to have a long weekend. I have good memories of Thanksgiving with family, visiting family, having family come visit. But it's not something where you ask me, you know, at the start of the year, be like, what are the three holidays you're looking forward to the most? I don't know if it's in the top three. I think it's definitely surpassed by a Christmas or a Canada Day, which is kind of our 4th of July. Not really, but it's around the same time. So, you know, we're so similar to the U.S., yet so different. Anyways, had a nice Thanksgiving. I don't know if anybody Canadian still listens to the show, but if you did, happy Thanksgiving to you as well. See the Americans, you're up in 7 weeks from now, and that's the start of your holiday season, which I do appreciate that. I do like that in states that they have their Thanksgiving in November, and then it's basically you can just do whatever you want until Christmas. It's like this super long holiday season that I really appreciate. I've always noticed that any American partners or clients that I work with, anytime after that American Thanksgiving, you basically got until like noon on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving to get anything done. And then you're not hearing back from them until like January 10th. So I do appreciate like the extended holiday season in the U.S. In Canada, it doesn't really mean anything. It's just now it kind of lines up with a different day off that we have a week prior for Truth and Reconciliation Day, which is a very different type of event. That is not not a holiday at all. So anyways, a lot of other things to talk about. Before we get into the Top Shot and the NHL and the Ballers, I want to share a little strange personal thing that happened to me over the weekend, unrelated to Thanksgiving. So as you guys know, LG, the L stands for Luke, right? And so my normal name is Luke Doucette, right? Nice little name, rolls off the tongue. And in my life, I have become aware of other people who have the exact same name as me, right? There are other Luke Doucettes out there. It's not... Doucette is not the most uncommon name in Canada. It's kind of like an Eastern Canadian name from an area called Acadia, which is kind of like a quasi-French English area, way, way east in the Maritimes of Canada, like Nova Scotia, that area. So there are a lot of other Doucettes, and then it's not Luke is not the most uncommon male name. So there are a lot of Luke, L-U-K-E, right? And that's a normal way you would probably spell it is Luke, L-U-K-E, right? And there's quite a few of those. There's actually a pretty well-known Canadian singer named Luke Doucette. And for literally, I'm not even exaggerating here, for 20 years, he's been releasing these kind of like middle of the line, popular kind of folk music albums. And often, especially early on, like in the 2000s, some people would ask me if I was him. They'd be like, Luke, do you moonlight as like an indie musician? And I'd be like, no, but that's funny that you think that. So anyways, I've been dealing with this kind of like, you know, oh, are you Luke Doucette the singer? I dealt with that for a long time in my life, but I don't think he's quite as prominent anymore. His band is named Whitehorse. Anyways, the story is not about him. This story is about a different Luke Doucette, because as much as there are many people who spell their name Luke, L-U-K-E, there are quite a lot that spell it my way, which is the French way, L-U-C, right? Because we're French Canadian. So my first name is L-U-C, Luke, and you can just pronounce it Luke. You don't have to say it the French way. It's very normal to say it that way. But I've come to realize that there are quite a few people in Quebec, not a quite a few, a handful, let's say, in Quebec, the French province in Canada, who have the exact same name as me. Their names are also Luke Doucette, spelt the same way, right? And I literally looked into this. I looked on like LinkedIn once and found like one guy does graphic design, like just different weird little things that you do on the internet. But occasionally, I will get an email to my Gmail address that is clearly for some other Luke Doucette out there. And sometimes it'll be like a receipt, like a digital receipt for like a purchase of something. Once I got an Expedia itinerary for like some Airbnb or like a B&B lodge, again, like in Newfoundland, Canada, where this guy, I guess, had booked like a stay for a week. And I guess I could have shown up and pretended to be him because I had the itinerary and I have his name. Anyway, so clearly there's a mix up where some other Luke Doucette in Quebec is giving my Gmail address to people. So, okay, and I'm talking like once a year I get an email like this. So I, you know, on weekends I try to disconnect. I don't really check my email. Don't really check my Twitter too much. And I just saw an email come in last night. And it was from a dude named Mario Saint Jean, Mario Saint Jean, as you would say in English. And it was a full like French email. And he said, hey, like in French, he basically said like, hey, sorry, I sent you an Interact money transfer, which is our kind of our Canadian version of Cash App, where you can actually email money to someone's email address. It's very normal to do when you're transferring money between friends or something. He said, hey, sorry, I sent you that. Please ignore it and don't accept it. So I look further in my email. And sure enough, this guy, Mario Saint Jean, had sent me $50, right? Which at first I was like, this is some kind of scam. Like, I'm not going to respond to this. But the thing is that with our Interact email transfer that we do in Canada, this funny little method we have for transferring money, you can actually set up your email to auto-deposit that money. So I have... And mine is set to auto deposit. So this dude, Mario, sent me $50. And he meant to send it to some other Luke Doucette, but he sent it to me. And my email automatically accepted it. So now I just have 50 extra dollars in my account. And I'm not really sure what to do because part of me feels like this is some kind of weird scam. But at the same time, I've gotten so many other emails for this other Luke Doucette in the past, not so many, but a few others. That I wonder that I'm like, it does kind of sound like an honest mistake, but then should I engage? What should I do? Or do I just keep it, do something nice with it, you know, go out for dinner or, well, go out, take myself out for dinner in Canada these days, or, you know, give it to a good cause or something like that, or spend it on NFTs. I don't know. Anyways, love to hear from you guys what I should do. Usually I bounce this off Phil I'm obviously A, weary of some kind of scam. B, feel kind of weird, guilty that I have this extra $50. Maybe this person who sent it really needs it or really owes it to Luke Doucette, the other guy. But I don't know. I find it kind of strange. I want to hear from this other Luke Doucette. I feel like that's what I need. I need to hear from the person that this was meant for to be like, hey, sorry. Like, you always get emails from me, like, the, you know, for a lodge in Nova Scotia. So, you know, just send this dude his $50 back. Anyways, if you guys in the comments, please let me know what you guys would do. Just shoot me an ad on Twitter, or you know, let me know in the YouTube comments or something like that, what you would do in this situation. Somebody sent you $50 by accident. Anyways, let's move on to I guess just like a general update of what's going on, sports NFTs in general. So a few different things. Top Shot Marketplace. I mean, we don't really talk Top Shot too much these days. You know, it's not the most thrilling it's been. I'm not crazy about, they've been doing a lot of run it back drops in the off seasons, and they do that usually to kind of hype up the new season. I think it's excessive. They did all these anthology drops. They did like such an insane amount of plays from 2014 to 2019, including the Kawhi shot, which should be exciting. But for me, I just can't be motivated to collect too many of these things. I feel like the minting just makes them a little less special each time. They just put it that way, you know, and I know that's a really hard thing to solve because they do need to make more. But it is something that it feels like every week they mint something, which is actually kind of funny, because if you think back to the very early days of Top Shot, when a lot of people joined, one of the very first questions, one of the most popular questions I used to get for Top Shot was, hey, when do packs drop? Because, you know, early days, it was very hard to get a pack. And everybody wanted to know when they dropped. And Top Shot originally on their site had language that said packs drop on Mondays and Thursdays. And back when that said that on the site is when they never did it. It was impossible to do it back there. Like, their tech, the site, everything just could not keep up with the demand of just people using the marketplace. So as a result, there was never an era where there were pack drops on Mondays and Thursdays. But that's what the website used to say. Now there's a pack drop every week, basically. Or at least it's felt that way for a long time, for several weeks on end. I don't know what the effects are on the market, because I don't really observe it too much. I am in some group chats with a few Top Shot hardos, as I call them, as they like to call themselves, who seem generally excited. So I feel like the people who are still into Top Shot are excited for these plays and these moments. So I will say that that's good, that the hardcores do seem excited. But at the same time, I think everybody is in the state, as they are with a lot of other sports NFTs. I'm sure it's the same for NFL and NHL and MLB, and especially, you know, anything that's kind of like collect these videos. Everybody's kind of in this state of like, well, is this going to break through? How's it going to break through? When are you going to start marketing this? Right. And I feel like it's going to be really hard to get away from that sentiment and that desire from people like myself and others until there's some kind of breakthrough there or some kind of major progress. So in general, I feel like it's going to continue to be hard to react positively to too many supply drops, especially with no new users coming in. Not that we necessarily, you know, it seems very almost greedy or kind of conflicted to say, well, I'm only going to like the product when there's new users coming in. But I think what I've tried to say many times is that, you know, what is going to be the feature that really breaks this product open? Does that feature exist? When's it going to happen? And even though it might be unfair to judge the day-to-day things on that bigger question, I do think that the bottom line for me these days, I haven't had a chance to talk about Top Shot in a while, is that it makes it hard to get excited for the product when there is so much of the product. I'll put it that way. I think it just makes things a little less special. I hang on to some of my Series 1 moments. I have the Series 1 final rare set, which you can sell packs from now on the pack marketplace. That's cool. I love that set. I'm going to keep it forever. I do think it's the last time LeBron's ever going to go to the finals. Sorry, Lakers fans, delusional Lakers fans. Yeah, that's all I have to say. A lot of questions, and I feel like, you know, we was beat on Top Shot, so I'll give it a rest there and hope that they can figure something out. They're going to release their I'm assuming their Series 5 plans sometime soon. The season starts in like a week, so hopefully we hear about that. Probably going to be an announcement of another, you know, million sets. Sorry, it's so easy. Anyways, some interesting stuff that's happened there, though, that's caught my eye, is that They did release the Top Shot Pack Marketplace, and that is out. It's a feature that's been long overdue. People have talked about it for a really long time as wanting it. It's a little bit disappointing so far because it only has Series 1 moments, which is like very, very, very few packs. And really, it's just, to me, the fact of having like Series 1 packs only is yet like another way to allow like Series 1 whales, some of which I know, or at least I used to know, had like hundreds of packs from Series 1. Because back then you could do that, or you know, some people used to find a way to do that. Anyways, I feel like it just gives those people, you know, a bit more cash in their pocket to sell those packs with all those moments. I do hope they get all the rest of the packs. And I will say that, you know, although pack marketplace might be kind of overdue, I hope that Top Shot finds a way to kind of integrate it into what the game of Top Shot is, right? Like what the market dynamics of Top Shot is, because we did see that on NFL All Day recently when they released their dynamic packs, right? With the new format of dynamic moments that evolve as a series, as the season goes. They released that at the same time, roughly. Actually, no, they've had the pack marketplace out for a while, but that was kind of, I think, some of the first big packs that were traded on the pack marketplace on secondary. And those packs, highly sought after, were traded heavily on the marketplace, and for the first couple weeks after they came out, we're going for a premium. I think for the rare packs, we're going for like 10 or 20% over. For the legendary packs, which originally cost $1,000 to buy, they were going for like $1,300, $1,400, $1,500. So that was kind of cool. That was kind of like part of the demand for those really hot new moments. So I am excited to see that play out on Top Shot when there is a sought after drop, to then see it sell out and see the price on secondary of those packs. I think a pack marketplace, even though this is not necessarily the best kind of user that Top Shot wants, I think that could bring back some of the flippers, or at least bring some people back, that it's like, hey, this is a good pack to get. And you know what? You don't even have to open it to get to extract the value from it. You can actually just hold it and flip it if you want, or prospectively flip it. And again, not necessarily the best kind of user, but if you look at the state of NFTs, a lot of people are still out there. The people with the liquidity, they are people looking for profit and not necessarily just looking to collect. So while Top Shot kind of figures out what it's going to be and how it's going to, you know, find these growth levers to grow things, maybe it's not the worst idea to get that pack marketplace out, do some really big, sexy drops, whatever that even means for Top Shot these days, that are accessible to a lot of people, bring a lot of people to the platform with the prospect of maybe making a bit of cash or collecting something cool or both, and then let them flip packs as they please. That's kind of like my thought. I just thought of that now. So I hadn't really thought about, you know, what I was going to say about the pack marketplace. But those are my thoughts. Too much supply, but still some interesting features kind of coming out on Top Shot, stuff that people have wanted for a long time, so put it that way. Anyways, let's move on. What else were we going to talk about? We're going to talk about NHL. So NHL, not necessarily, how do I put this? Not necessarily everybody's cup of tea sport, right? Often a number five sport for some people. Some people like NHL, though, really love NHL. And I've fluctuated my fandom over time, right? My team, the Toronto Maple Leafs, are a really challenging team to be fans of, especially in the last 30 years, 40 years since I've been alive. So, you know, not but NHL still, you know, as a Canadian person, still in my blood to some extent, growing up playing hockey, a lot of Canadian hockey players being Canadian, Canada typically being a, you know, gold medal favorite for Olympics or junior world juniors or any other kind of major competition in hockey. So it is kind of our thing. So it is cool to finally see NHL breakaway NFTs coming out. We have talked about it a little bit. I do like what they've done with their rollout. So they've rolled out, I guess, packs kind of slowly, right? And ensuring that their packs typically sell out. Although I think they have some packs that have been available for a little bit. But I think what they've done, they've done quite a few things right if you think that selling sports highlights is going to be a big thing, or that you think that that's still a really viable market. I'm on the fence about that question, but within the sphere of, hey, fans love buying highlights, they love trading highlights, they love collecting highlights, and this whole segment of collecting, card collecting, is going to grow and be massive. I do think NHL Breakaway is doing things really well. They knocked down their supply after everybody complained when they released their initial supply numbers back in the spring. That's a huge plus up. Sacrificed a lot of their own intuition and their own planning based on community feedback. They really cut down supply. They do not have a marketplace yet, which is a big flag for me. But if we didn't know the team so well, I'd say it's a massive flag. But what they have done that I am really happy with is they've enabled gifting. So even though there's no marketplace, people are trading over the counter by gifting NHL highlights to each other. And they coupled that with a like collecting challenge where you can basically freeze all your highlights from now until the end of the season to earn a new one. So very similar to locking and unlocking on Top Shot, but more, you know, a little bit more catered to not an arbitrary number like 12 months like Top Shot does it, but very catered to, hey, until the end of the season. So they've already kind of gamified it a little bit. The gifting feature, I actually find that having only a gifting feature and not a marketplace is actually kind of a good community lever, because I've been trying to collect a few from different sets on Breakaway. And the only way to do that, besides just spending endless money amount on packs, shout out Cryptoys for making people do that, is to go into the Discord and find trading partners, which is obviously a little sketchy because you don't know if it's, you know if the person's going to back out or they're going to be a weirdo. But I've been able to have a couple successful trades through that. And again, it's made me kind of go and meet people, go and say, hey, I'm looking for this player, I'm trading this player, or say hi to a few people. So it's already gotten me a little bit more involved. So I will say that is pretty nice. The one big question I have for Breakaway, obviously, we just put up a poll last night or today, I guess, on First Mint Twitter asking, you know, what kind of promotion marketing would be good for NHL Breakaway to do, with a few joke answers in there, like one NFT equals one beer. That'd be pretty good. But what I am curious to know is, does NHL Breakaway and their partner at the NHL and NHLPA, do they have a large marketing plan set in place for this season? Are they going to take this as a beta season and then go harder next year? How invested is the NHL in this? Does the NHL have like these big target revenue numbers, kind of like similar that we've heard that NBA and NFL have? You know, those are some big questions. But my, you know, I think those are questions, again, like I was saying, for all this whole highlight segment. Is this going to grow? How does it grow? Right. So I think we have a lot of questions for NHL Breakaway that are similar to all the other platforms. But my actual big question is, since they've been so good with supply and managing collector expectations of supply, is how will they manage when they have to start minting new highlights of the same players? Right. Right now, Connor McDavid, the best player in the world, might already breaking records, might be the best player in 30 years, better than a Crosby or an Ovechkin. And the next Connor McDavid starting in the league this year, Connor Bedard, another Canadian Connor. Someone like Connor McDavid, who is the face of the NHL, is just entering his prime, is set to have many record-breaking seasons in the next decade, half decade. Will there still be demand for him when he gets to 10 highlights on NHL Breakaway? And how will NHL Breakaway manage that? Right now on NFL All Day, we're seeing, you know, a lot of unhappiness, I think, from certain collectors, because All Day has focused a lot of their gamification on this current season, on dynamic moments, on making the playbook a thing about this season. And people are unhappy, I think, because they're like, well, what about moments from series one and two, right? Shouldn't those matter for now? And so how do you do that? How do you, I think, is something that each of these platforms has kind of struggled with, or at least that's one of the big nuts to crack to keep their current collectors happy, is how do you introduce new supply, gamify it, make it fun, but then not totally destroy the market for people's previous grails of the same players. And that's one of the big questions, I think, that makes me kind of question the whole segment. But I think for NHL, starting from scratch here, they have no history. There's only one play of each player right now, or at least one from each set or tier. How do you manage that, right? Connor McDavid is going to have an insane amount of highlights this year. He'll have an insane amount of highlights next year and the year after that. And he is very ripe to have many legendary rare moments or highlights. But how do you manage that in terms of the market not totally collapsing when you release some of that new supply? And do you want that market to supply? Is it the platform's responsibility to prop up the market, or is it the collector's responsibility to prop up the value of grails as just collectibles and not to hope for all this gamification? Because I think that's one of the interesting things that's happened on All Day, is that, like, well, you know, these are supposed to be collectibles. The gamification is the cherry on top. And yet the market and the collectors now are saying they're unhappy that there's not enough gamifications for what are supposed to be simply collectibles. So I think that's kind of like this bizarre balance that all these platforms are going to have to find in the next couple of years to survive, is setting the expectations of collectors and of the market to, you know, really decide what these are? Are you just holding these just to hold them? And if so, is the platform's responsibility to not make too many of them? So anyways, that's my rant on NHL. I will, tomorrow or today, whatever you're listening to this, today's Monday, Tuesday, tomorrow, they are releasing NHL Elites, which are, I believe, are, what are they again? I think they're rookie moments of the best players of today. Actually, I'm going to check that out. What are these elites again? Yes, so it's today's stars scoring their first goal or making their debut. So this is basically like a historical set of NHL that's coming out this week, and it's going to have people like Sidney Crosby, Anze Kopitar, Elias Pettersson. Like, it's going to have a lot of these big stars, and it's going to have their like first goal or first night. I did see somewhere that Austin Matthews from the Maple Leafs is going to have a highlight in this set, and his first game ever, he scored 4 goals, which is pretty insane. That doesn't happen very much ever in hockey, so that's pretty cool. So maybe I'll collect that. Maybe I'll show up. I think these packs are $65 a pack, 5 highlights in each, only 2,000 packs. So I'll probably line up for that. Although I am keen to finish some of this set. So I'm enjoying NHL. All of that to say is that I'm enjoying NHL so far, and hopefully further it continuing that enjoyment into the future. Let's put it that way. All right. So that's NHL. We talked about Top Shot Marketplace. I'm going to end with Ballers. First, I'm going to talk about First Media Pass, which is kind of dead right now. Honestly, we had a lot of fun with Media Pass. It was a really fun creative exercise for us and for me to kind of come up with this new kind of token gamification of our ecosystem. But a few weird things have happened, and you know, we've decided to wrap the streaming season on November 1st. Last week, we were supposed to do Pitch Zone, but we didn't have anybody who wanted to pitch. Maybe we were too savage on some of the previous streams, which if you haven't been following, we did some streams for Pitch Zone, and we had some people come up, and it kind of turned into a roast each time. So I don't know if that has drawn people away. All of this has been an experiment. So we've had, you know, maybe 40 media passes redeemed, which is about 20% of them. I'm thrilled with that. I'm happy that people have wanted to play. We only have a few episodes left, and then all the other media passes, like things like having dinner with us, buying an ad and the First Mint newsletter, all that kind of stuff, that's all going to come up. You know, that's all going to be valid until November 28th, the original date for anybody who bought it, which I think there's a few people who haven't used theirs. Anyways, we're going to make that happen still, but it's been a fun experiment. I will say I do think it's kind of died off now. I think initially I was hoping that our holders would list their NFTs for a little less than they did initially, and I had to beg them a few times to kind of list them lower, because I don't think anybody wanted to pay like $900 to do spaces with First Mint, at least not in this market. But I will say, to my own discredit, I think the system was a little too complicated for both our collectors and our community of collectors and other people to understand, and also compiled with a little too complicated for sponsors. I still talk to a lot of sponsors. And some of them I've been sending, you know, most of them I tried to send to media passing, hey, you can buy a tweet on First Mint, you can buy a newsletter ad, you can do spaces with us for way less than I would charge you normally. And a lot of them haven't really understood what I was talking about. They've been kind of confused. So maybe it's a little too much. And also just general market conditions. A lot of our community is checked out right now. You know, we're in the bear market, and I don't blame anybody for taking some time away from NFTs. I know even on the content creator side, there are a lot of people who were making content back in 2021 and early 2022 who aren't here anymore. And that's totally fine. And I hope people are taking breaks, because crypto is kind of a weird thing. We all met each other in the pandemic, and now pandemic's over and crypto's kind of dead. So I hope people are taking time off. So I'm not surprised that it's been as slow as it has for the media pass, but I do appreciate anybody who did participate. And maybe we'll find a way to end it in style. We have a few trivia nights coming up, which will be super fun. But yeah, a lot of things to think about for Series 2. Season 2 and what we could do differently next time. And hey, it isn't over. Okay. It's not completely over. So who knows what other kind of chaos might happen between now and the end of Season 1 of First Mint Media Pass, which again was just a fun, weird little experiment for us to do. All right. Last topic. I told you guys it wouldn't be too long of a show, is Ballers. So as you know, on the show, we've been talking about Ballers. I pitched randomly out of nowhere, out of thin air, the idea of buying the Ballers collection and pretty much trying to mimic what Luka Netz has done with Pudgy Penguins. And I talked about this on the podcast a couple weeks ago with Phil. I explained it to him. Luka Netz, who is this 24-year-old like Shopify wonder kid who's done all these e-commerce businesses, bought the Pudgy Penguins NFT collection from the original owner, who kind of threw it away, wasn't a very good manager of it. He bought it from him for, I think, $2.5 million 2 years ago or a year ago, just over a year ago, got a bit of funding to kind of back it up. And now last week or 2 weeks ago has managed to even distribute it into Walmart. So you can buy Pudgy Penguin plushies at Walmart and a bunch of other retailers now. He's done a couple $1 million in Amazon sales of, again, these cute little penguin NFT plushies, physical ones. And I think that's been really fantastic. And I wanted, you know, I've always felt like something like Ballers, which had a lot of that community love, that's something like Penguin did have early on as well. Ballers, which was kind of the darling of the Flow ecosystem, was supposed to be the punks of the Flow ecosystem. I always felt like had that potential because the art was cool, simple, 8-bit stuff, but it was kind of like punks, but what looked cool. People really loved it. People still love it. So I threw it out on the podcast that, you know, we should find a way to buy it and bring it back to its glory. Since then, a few different things have happened. First off, 2 weeks ago, there was an offer, not for Ballers, but for a different well-known collection from the Bull Run called Gutter Cat Gang. So Gutter Cat Gang is a NFT PFP collection that came out a few weeks after Apes, and it was a carbon copy of Apes. It was like Bored Apes, but they're cats. It was literally like exactly the same kind of site, exactly the same kind of language. And it took off. People thought the cats were cool, and they would go on Twitter and say gang gang at each other like they were gang members instead of just nerdy kids, you know, getting rich suddenly. And that collection has kind of died off. Like they threw a lot of parties. I think we did a couple things with them, but I think the founders have kind of grown tired. I think it's the same thing that's going to happen to a lot of other NFT collections from that time of like, okay, once you've thrown some parties and kind of developed the brand, what else do? Unless you're a Luca and you're going to do some Pudgy Penguins action, what else do you do with your brand? And I heard recently that there was an offer on that collection to buy it for $500,000, which is way less than buying penguins for $2.5 million, but that was still kind of in the bull run. Gutter Cat Gang has done $50 million in secondary volume all time, and their floor is $500. You compare that to something like Ballers. And again, the offer on the cats is 500 grand. $50 million in volume, $500 floor. Ballers has done $13 million in volume, quite a lot, compared to 50 for cats, and the floor is $40, way less than cats. So with that math, and again, the Gutter Cat people haven't accepted that bid, how much would Ballers actually be worth? 100 grand, maybe? I don't think the people who made it would ever sell it. I think it's their holy grail. I think they know they have something good, and I think they'd only charge like $100 million for it. So I really don't think it could happen. But I thought that was, you know, if you do that math, that's kind of interesting. That's one thing that's happened since we threw out, you know, not a proposal, the idea. The other thing that's happened is I've met a lot of wonderful people who've reached out and who've added me to their groups who really love Ballers and are really desperate to keep it alive and really want to see it under other management. And it definitely seems clear to me that despite the people who run Ballers, own Ballers, are very, very unlikely to ever part ways with it, it does seem like it's something that the community wants. And it's something the community wants to see. The community wants some fresh blood. They want some fresh direction. They want their NFTs or the NFTs used to have to thrive and to do something kind of cool and have a bit of a different vibe or a significantly different vibe. And, you know, just like in sports, it's like, listen, you can have some great coaches or great managers or whatever you have out there, but it's clear after a while that the time is done and that you need fresh blood for better or for worse. So I feel like that's, you know, even though a lot of people are trying to keep the Ballers dream alive, it does need like a significant reboot if it's going to survive. I see that in a lot of other collections that are just kind of middling, like trying to find these weird little revenue sources and they're just trying to survive to the bull run, but without having any kind of vision of what the brand could be. So anyways, that's the kind of interesting stuff that's happened since Ballers. I've met some really great people that are really passionate about the brand, and maybe some kind of price setting will happen, or at least some kind of idea of what an actual market price could be will happen. Again, I threw it out there as an idea. I met some people that I think are far more qualified to do it, to run the project than I am, who are way more passionate about Ballers and have a much better idea of what it would be. So I will give kudos to them, and also not back away from my concept, but we'll just put that out there as a caveat that there is a lot of interest in doing that kind of stuff. So going to leave it at that for today. I think that's all I have for today. We do have another Media Pass show this Wednesday, trivia for anybody who wants to play. I think there's only a few entrants so far. And otherwise, I hope you enjoyed this old school throwback of an old school episode of The First Mint. That's just me talking for half an hour about different stuff that's going on in sports NFTs. So happy Thanksgiving to Canada and people who love Canada. And I hope you all have a wonderful week. And we'll see you guys next week on First Mint.